My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Banks & Bloom Distillery & Lab is a West Australian company founded by biochemist Elaine Darby and winemaker Trent Carroll. Trent's name might be familiar to some of you from his earlier AFL career at Fremantle and West Coast. But it was Elaine's background that caught my eye when a media release came through recently announcing that Banks & Bloom Ice Vodka had been awarded double gold in the San Francisco World Spirits Competition. Between 2015 and 2018, Elaine was managing director of OzCan, an Australian pharmaceutical company focused on cannabinoid-based medicines. She's also had careers as a winemaker and a lawyer, but it's the medicinal cannabis that is relevant to today's episode. Banks & Bloom owes its origins to another business founded by Elaine and Trent called Aquila Black, which has developed THC extract technology that they believe will revolutionise the cannabis drinks market overseas, where recreational cannabis is legal. To create these cannabis drinks, Aquila Black pioneered new distillation methods to extract pure clarity of flavour from classic botanicals and native Australian ingredients. And as Elaine will explain to you in a moment, this R&D turned out to be applicable to developing an innovative new range of spirits, gin, vodka, and RTDs, that can be legally enjoyed today here in Australia.
Well, Elaine Darby, great to have you on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having me, James. It's absolutely great.
I have to say, having read your biography, I think you're about the most highly qualified person I've ever had on the show with a really interesting career background.
Yeah, I have sort of skipped across into quite a few different things in my varied past, I guess you should say. But yeah, predominantly in the area of science. So I do think of myself, you know, as a scientist at heart. So a lot of those industries and various things I've been involved with, it really has evolved around that.
What about the drink side of things? Because I think you've got some winemaking background as well as the recent distilling venture.
Yes. So this was when I was just completing honours, actually, back quite a few years, doing molecular biology and biochemistry. And at that point, I was actually working in the area of plants, which is what I always seem to be coming back to all the time. And that was actually predominantly with wheat at that point in time. So it was really, I guess, at a point where either I continue on, do PhD, or I started getting quite a fascination with fermentation at this point as well, which is like, well, I can spend another few years at uni doing a PhD, or hey, might go give winemaking a go. So went and joined up with some great winemakers down at Margaret River to learn the trade and also do a few things at Roseworthy, and yeah, went into the wine business, which was a hell of a lot of fun.
Did that come from an interest in drinking it as well as the interest in the technical production side of things?
Well, it was interesting. I wasn't actually a big wine drinker to start with when I first started, which sounds really, really odd. Certainly the rest of the family were good wine drinkers, so being led by them. But I think it was other elements of the winemaking that attracted me initially. So I think that whole concept of here you've got these particular plants, in this case grapes, with these amazing various little compounds in there, and how you can transform them using yeast and other techniques to create these beautiful complex beverages. And I guess that's really was the initial passion for me. And then obviously following on from that, I developed a great appreciation and probably in particular more the reds, Cabernet Sauvignon, because down in Margaret River, where I was working at that time, that was, you know, really the king grape, I would suggest.
Absolutely. And so is Aquila Estate, is that a winery that maybe you actually had an interest in as well? Or
Yes. So that was a family winery. So the great thing was is my my parents sort of financially backed that one for me. And it actually started in a corner of avocado packing shed. So the family business is avocado orchards. So backed me to put in some tanks and whatnot in the corner of one of the packing sheds, and it all that went from there.
And the wines, you know, are you still involved in that business or?
No. We wrapped that up after about 12 years or so. I sort of had developed other interests at that point in time, James, that took my fancy. And so unfortunately we wrapped up the wine business. And it was at that time, I don't know if you remember, there was a bit of a crunch in the industry. There was a lot of managed investment schemes that got into the growing of grapes. And we had that weird period where there was like that, the wine glut, I guess, you know, that excess of grapes. And it was just getting harder and harder with your marketing, your margins. We were selling predominantly overseas, so in the US and Canada. But things were just getting, you know, tighter and tighter. You know, you were competing with the likes of Yellowtail and a lot of those other brands. So it became quite a tough sector in the end. And, we sort of made the difficult decision, which is hard where you put, you know, I guess your heart and soul into a business. But, yeah, we made the tough decision to wrap that one up at that point.
When was that, sorry?
So that, thinking back, that was probably around 98, after.
Sure. And then fast forward 20-odd years and you started a distillery. So how did that come about?
Banks and Bloom came about. It was interesting because in my sort of interim time for being in the beverage sector, I was also working sort of in the biotechnology space. And we were working with, once again, plants, but more in the medical side of things. And we were starting to do quite a bit of work with cannabinoids out of cannabis. And this was for pharmaceutical purposes. So extracting these particular compounds out of cannabis, putting them in a pharmaceutical format that could be used for patients. And so you're probably thinking, well, how the heck did you get from that over to beverages? Well, what happened was, in Canada, where we had spent quite a bit of time and also quite a few states of the US, were legislating to allow recreational use of cannabis and consumption of cannabinoids. And what I guess really interests us was some of the other effects of cannabinoids, not just from a medical point of view, but also from an enjoyment point of view in terms of why these people were taking it. And we saw it as potentially an alternative to alcohol. So creating beverages using cannabinoids that give you the same similar effects to alcohol. So basically they make you feel good socially and all those other kind of aspects, but without the downsides that you sometimes get with alcohol, you know, in terms of the hangover the next day and these things.
So are we talking THC here or?
Yeah, primarily THC as a psychoactive, but also CBD does play a small role. So our beverages, so we did create these beverages and we use some really cool tech that we actually have lodged patents for where we can extract cannabinoids out of cannabis plants and we can put them in a stable format because they're highly unstable, these little compounds, and also they don't like water, so we put them in a format where they could be utilized in a beverage, and also they have a slow uptake when you swallow them, so we also with our technology allows you to feel the effects within 9 minutes.
Oh, right, because everything that you described to me so far, having seen the evolution of the cannabis industry in the US and edibles and drinkables and all these things are sort of fairly widespread over there, but it sounds like that's what makes this technology unique is the way that it works and the speed at which it works. Is that right?
Yes, to feel the effects. So I guess this whole concept and this tech, we also have used other techniques, some of them similar to this, to apply it to extract flavors, colors and aromas out of a range of plants to put into these beverages. So essentially these particular beverages that we made, we used a lot of Australian natives. So that's where our initial interest in Australian natives came along. So we did a lot of work there extracting some really cool aromas and flavors and all sorts of profiles there for these particular drinks. And then essentially COVID came along, which hampered some of our activities in terms of traveling back and forth to the US and so on and so forth. And so we sort of sat down and had to think and thinking, well, we've already got a lot of this cool technology and ideas. Let's look at the spirit sector, because we all, essentially all the founders have been involved in the company. We do love our spirits. We love the beautiful, you know, high quality spirits. And we thought, let's turn our minds to that. So essentially that's when we started initially with our gin, our signature gin, and also then led into vodka, and now it's flowing onto our range of ready-to-drinks and so on and so forth. So I guess that was really the beginning, and that's where our company Aquila Black was born, and that's the one that has now launched the Banks and Bloom brand of beverages.
Which is yourself and Trent Carroll, I believe, is, yes. Is he your business partner in that?
Yeah, so in the Banks and Bloom team, Trent Carroll, who has an extensive experience in the winemaking sector, so he was senior winemaker for McHenry Cohen, down in Margaret River, also founded his own drinks company called Rock Kombucha, so he's very experienced in that whole beverage space. And, yeah, as I say, alongside Shay Dillon is our other key individual in the marketing team. We're basically a bunch of science nerds.
Yeah, I can tell.
Even though Trent does not look like a nerd. What I guess really excites us is really just this array of plants, the amazing different chemicals that are in them, and really is our ability to extract particular things that we're after and then just put them into these beautiful beverages.
It's the same patented process that you used with the, you know, the cannabinoids that you were talking about before that you're using with the distillation of these botanicals for use in the spirits.
Not exactly, a little bit different. So we're using some other tech we've created specifically for these distilled spirits. But some of the, I guess, knowledge that we gain from that is highly applicable across to this also, in terms of especially working with some of those Australian botanicals, and how to, I guess, get the best out of them in terms of what we're wanting. Because, I mean, if you look at, you know, say a particular one, say like the Davison plum, I mean, that's got an amazing colour, beautiful colour. But personally, I don't think a heck of a lot of its flavour profile. So that's not something that we're after, but we'd like the colour. We'd like to get the colour out, put it in a stable format. So if we use that colour in a beverage, it's nice and stable going forward. And, yeah, which is a key thing, because you find with a lot of those colour compounds, they do readily degrade as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I know there's a couple of other products on the market featuring Australian botanicals that I sort of noticed my bottle after opening it just kind of oxidized into a brown colour. Yeah.
Which is not ideal. So, yeah, so that's where I guess some of our tech really we have a lot of fun with. And so a key thing is really, yes, stability of those particular compounds. And also too, some of them don't readily go into water compounds. So I guess having that solubility as well, challenges solved.
Yeah, maybe if you could talk through some of the other botanicals that you're working with and how it's cold vacuum distillation, is that right? How that benefits you working with those botanicals?
Essentially, I guess, with the cold distillation, how that varies to traditional distillation techniques that you see. So I'll use the example, say, of our gin. With the various botanicals that you have, some of them benefit from distilling at a hotter temperature. So, for instance, the particular phytochemicals that come out of, say, juniper at a hotter temperature is different to what's going to come out at a low temp. And each of them, you know, can bring positive attributes to a gin. So what we do with our gin is we use a combination of both. So the base, as I call it, of our gin is from hot distillation, copper pot still. All your traditional botanicals for gin are in there, like your juniper, your coriander, your angelica root, your licorice. We also put into the pot there a few different Aussie botanicals. So for our citrus, we use the native citrus, the blood lime, desert lime in there. We also put in some wattle seed, and also a neat little thing called a boonji tamarind from Queensland. It's like a tarty, fruity particular number. They go in the hot pot. But then what we do is once we've distilled that and we've got that base, To give a nice, sweet, delicate characteristic of the citrus, we cold distill that. So that is distilled between 0 and 15 degrees Celsius, say. And you can do that by applying a vacuum. Obviously, it lowers the distillation or the boiling point of the ethanol. Doing that, that then carries those lovely little terpenes and whatnot over. But what you tend to find with the cold distillation method is that, first of all, you're not cooking the particular botanicals. So, for instance, you know, it's like comparing, say, a fresh strawberry flavours to, say, strawberry jam. So you're not cooking, you're not chemically changing those things in the botanical doing this. And also, when you do the cold distillation, you're getting less monoterpenes coming over. So you do have that different aroma profile. It can be described, I guess, as probably the more sweeter, delicate kind of notes out of botanicals. It works extremely well. So we do a cold distill that we then add to our base gin. So it gives it that other layer of complexity, I guess, and those higher sweeter notes. And with our vodka, we do it all with cold distillation with that particular one.
The distilling part of the business, it's a deep personal love that we have for the products.
Bintani made its name on supplying ingredients to craft brewers, and the company has relished the opportunity to support Australia's growing craft spirits industry.
Whether it's new flavour profiles that suddenly shift the direction that gin goes in, utilising Australian wine barrels for whiskey in a way that people haven't done before, that's incredibly exciting.
Bintani offers the country's most comprehensive range of fermentables, yeast, flavours and more, with in-house experts who can help its customers create the products of their dreams.
The whiskies and the wood-aged products have a very long gestation, and when they finally hit the market, invariably they're winning awards and they're making the rest of the world sit up and take notice. It's a wonderful thing for us to be a part of.
Bintani, a proud supporter of the Drinks Adventures podcast.
There's a pretty high percentage of the staff here who have fairly good whiskey libraries at home, and we really do enjoy that side of the business as much as we do craft beer.
Visit bintani.com.au to get in touch with Dale Meddings and the team.
And what are you aiming for with the vodka? Is it a flavoured vodka or is it a neutral vodka that's sort of got just some nuance from these botanical elements?
Yeah, so the vodka, it was an interesting one, and we were so thrilled to get that recognition over in San Francisco for this particular one, because it's one, it's been hard, I guess, to categorise. And I think, you know, our marketing person, Shay, every time says, well, what class do we put this one in? Is it a flavoured vodka or what is it? It has, I think, as you mentioned, that just a nuance is probably a great way to explain it. So what we're after here was something incredibly smooth, sweet, with a touch of citrus in there. And that's what we've achieved with this particular vodka. So having that cold distillation only gives it that nice little delicate sweet notes. It doesn't dominate it at all, but it's definitely one that you can enjoy straight on ice, just smooth by itself, just neat. But also too, it is, because it doesn't, you know, pack a punch with any of the other flavours in there, you can also use it as a good quality cocktails also.
Where you're actually distilling it, and what's your plan around bringing it to market? Where can people find it? Is there a cellar door or anything along those lines?
There's not a cellar door at the moment, because where our company is sort of evolved out of, and the labs that we have associated around us that have supported a lot of our development technique, we're pretty much on a restricted site, unfortunately, with that, because you will appreciate our prior work with cannabinoids and whatnot. Essentially, where we're located at the moment is all our R&D development work, right through to production, packaging and out the door. So what we will look at down the track is relocating somewhere where perhaps we can be more accessible and have a public facing, which would be great. But at the moment, a lot of the Celebrations liquor stores in Western Australia now stock our product, which is absolutely brilliant. There is a website will be launched soon. It's like with any, you know, new company sort of bringing all these pieces together. So that will allow us also to interact directly with consumers as well, which will be great.
And I noticed in the media release, I think Trent actually made the comment, we're nearing the launch of our THC extract technology that will revolutionise the cannabis drinks market overseas. So that's sort of all obviously been produced with export in mind at this stage. But I mean, in Australia, we've got medicinal cannabis now. Do you and Trent sort of feel that at some point in the future that there'll be a market for these products locally as well?
Yes. I've been asked this quite a few times, I guess, over the years in terms of when is Australia going to legislate to allow recreational use. It's a really interesting one. I mean, obviously Canada has legislated it federally, so across all of Canada. The US has not federally, so it's still state by state. A lot of the states have, California obviously being the biggest market there. But I think Australia will probably be waiting for the US to move on this. And I think that's because there is that with the UN convention in respect to these particular substances, their attitude towards it. So I think it will still take a few years. The US is interesting because it's already has going through its legislator laws to essentially change the banking rules to allow cannabis companies now to, you know, federally utilize the banks. So I think it is definitely coming. It's not if, it's when. And look, if I had to place a bet, I'd say 5 years. You know, anything could happen with change of governments. And when that does happen, we're ready. We're ready to launch our products here as well.
But the spirits is obviously exciting in the meantime. Gin and vodka, do you see those as sort of being the two key spirits for you? Will there be expansion?
At this stage, certainly the gin and vodka, I would say, are our key signature drinks. And I think that a lot of that comes from, I mean, they're obviously personal favourites too. And there's so much space and room to create in both those areas. Like I think, you know, the whole range of botanicals that we can apply in both of those sectors is extremely exciting. So, you know, we'd obviously like to bring out various limited releases of new gins and vodkas going forward, and also into our RTDs, our ready-to-drink canned products.
What has been your approach in terms of sourcing some of those native ingredients?
So I guess when it comes to Australian natives, there's a couple of challenges there. One, as you say, is sourcing this stuff sustainably and responsibly, but also to that variability we're seeing. And I think it's because it's a fairly new sector commercially. I mean, obviously these particular botanicals have been used for thousands of years by First Nations, but in terms of a commercial point of view, it's still relatively new for the beverage industry to be using them. What you're seeing at the moment is that, say, for example, if we go back to, say, the Davison plum, I'm not sure why because it's not really a favourite of mine, but anyway, let's just say if we look at the Davison plum, say, compare that to apple. So you say that's like an apple. Well, how many different apples are there? How many different species? How many different cultivars? And wattle, for example, you know, there's 1,000 different species in Australia of wattle, of acacia. So if you're suddenly saying, well, look, I love wattle seed, but which species are you utilising from? Which area is it coming from? Once again, you know, it's like wine grapes. You can say, look, I love a Cabernet Sauvignon out of Margaret River, but that's a very different thing, even if it's exactly the same cultivar, but if you grow it somewhere else, it's going to be very different. So you have this huge challenge about variability when it comes to Aussie natives. One of the keys for us has been finding the right partners to work with us as suppliers of these things. For instance, with the native citrus here in WA, there's a group called Marvic Farms. So Vicky there, for example, has selected particular cultivars of those various genetics to give you the best desert lime, to give you the best bloodline. Same as Geraldine up at Rainforest Bounty. You know, when I went to their property up in the Atherton Tablelands, they have a whole range of different Davison plums, and you can see the difference in the trees. The trees actually all look different. So our first thing is really making sure we have the right suppliers who are producing these products appropriately and can give us some level of consistency. So from year to year, we can say, look, you know, the wattle seed, this is going to be, you know, obviously you're going to get a small variability because of seasonality, but we do have some level of assurance. And then the great thing with our technology, as I was saying, where we extract things out of plants, so essentially any of these little goodies or phytochemicals we're after, we want to extract out, we can put them in a shelf-stable format. So even though you're harvesting, say, the blood lime at one time of the year, we can then, using our tech, put that in a nice stable format and basically have it there consistent for your all year round supply as well, which is another key element for us with our production.
Did you taste a lot of Australian gins as research for developing your own products and kind of get a feel for how some of these native botanicals were expressed in existing products?
I have tried a lot more since then, but I don't think it was really a guiding point for us, because I think the way that they've utilized them is probably quite different to how we have. So obviously a characteristic that you may see in a particular botanical, whether it's a wattle seed in a gin, might taste quite different to how our wattle seed tastes in our gin. So depending what temperature we did it at, what was your uranisyl ethanol water mix, how did it, so there's so many different variables that probably wasn't the starting point for us to decide if that's botanical we're after. So what we did approached it is we essentially got a huge range of Australian botanicals and we just went through and tasted them in all different formats. So we did extracts of them. We looked at their colours, we looked at the taste profiles and worked it from there to say, look, well, we really love the characteristics of that one for that purpose and how could that work in our gin and complement the juniper? Or how would that work in, say, a vodka? I mean, the fun thing with vodka is essentially you've got that beautiful clean slate just to to create upon. You know, you don't have those other botanicals there to start with. So that was really how we approached. But in doing so now, you know, obviously we try quite a few others and just out of interest to see what others are doing.
And you mentioned there's some RTDs as well. Yeah. Maybe you could just quickly run over how you've gone about creating those.
Yeah, so the RTDs are pretty cool. There is a gin and soda based one and a vodka and soda. So the gin one, it has flavourings of desert lime predominantly in there. And a few other Aussie natives. And the vodka has passion fruit. Only natural ingredients have been added, no added sugar, and we make everything from scratch. So we don't buy any syrups in, we don't buy any flavourings off the shelf. It is all fresh fruit, fresh botanicals have come in. We do our extraction process and that's how we create these RTDs. And I think that really reflects in the flavour profile of them as well. And I probably should also touch on about the sweetness with RTDs. So what you find with a lot of the alcoholic RTDs out there in the market at the moment is the amount of sugar that's been added into these products. And because of, you know, our unusual laws, we don't have to put labelling on packaging when it comes to an alcohol. So you don't have to say exactly what you've put in there. Our approach is that we don't add anything that we're not happy to say is in there loud and proud on the label. So what we actually do for sweetness level, we also have done some work to create our own proprietary sweetener. So once again, this is a particular compound. We've extracted our botanical. It's got essentially 20 times the sweetness as sucrose, but you don't have any calories with it. So the great thing with our RTDs, less than 100 calories and really pack a lot of flavour.
Well, it's been really interesting talking to you, covered some really fascinating territory that we don't normally get into. So congratulations on the award for the Ice Vodka and looking
Thanks,
forward
James.
To seeing how these projects evolve for you.
No, that's brilliant. Thanks very much for your time, James.